Welcome to Not So Different, a podcast from the Center for Biosimilars. I'm your host, Kelly Davio. Last time on the podcast, we spoke with Christine Simmon of the Biosimilars Council about how the CREATES Act, a piece of legislation before Congress, could impact biosimilars. Today, we're talking about state-level legislation concerning the substitution of interchangeable biosimilars, namely how one specific piece of legislation led to the formation of the Nebraska Rheumatology Society. My guest this week is Dr. Marcus Snow, a rheumatologist at the University of Nebraska Medical Center and assistant professor of rheumatology at the University of Nebraska. Dr. Snow joined me by phone to tell me how the Nebraska Rheumatology Society came to be. Dr. Snow, why did you decide to form the Nebraska Rheumatology Society?
Well, you know, ultimately, it all started from an email I received from the American College of Rheumatology, actually through the division chief in our group. And Dr. O'Dell was a former president of the American College of Rheumatology, and one of his contacts there sent him an email asking about what the rheumatologists in Nebraska would, how they would feel about the biosimilar bill that was being considered in our legislature. And so, since I'm on a committee, the Committee on Rheumatic Care inside the American College of Rheumatology, he actually forwarded on to me and said, you know, what do we think about this? And at that point, even though we have around 30 rheumatologists in our state, we're all spread out and work in different systems, and communication isn't necessarily easy if we wanted it to happen very quickly. And so that kind of was one of those aha moments where I thought that this may be something that we could strike up and we could start. And so at that point, over the next month or so, I talked to some contacts in the American College of Rheumatology that I know from my committee, and I really asked them how things worked for them, and they were very supportive and very positive. And so I sent a couple emails out to the rheumatologists in the state. And so the feedback I got was great, and then kind of from there we all pitched in and came together.
Why is it so important to have an organization that focuses on these state-level policies?
Well, I mean, obviously, if a bill comes in front of the legislature on a Wednesday afternoon, it's not going to be easy for all of us to get there and drop everything in our clinic and you know, make our way to Lincoln to testify. But if we have an organization where we can discuss this and we can discuss the pros and the cons and come to a consensus, we can have one person there who represents all of us, and that can further and it can allow our voice to be heard in a better fashion. And so that's one of the reasons why we formed this society, and there are lots of reasons why we did, but being able to work together for each other is going to be really important and something that I think will be a big benefit for us all.
Are there some particular issues that are on your radar for the coming months?
You know, at this point, we are still in the very early stages of our organization. We've had some bylaws meetings. We had one bylaw meeting where we had about two-thirds of the rheumatologists in the state in the same room at once, which was amazing to have to get started. And at that point, we were essentially kind of laying the groundwork for, you know, what we would be and how we would do our business. So we've had one board meeting so far, and at this point, our next meeting is scheduled for about a month from now. And at that time, we'll kind of actually establish what our agenda will be moving forward at that meeting.
Do you have any advice for other clinicians who may be considering forming entities like the Nebraska Rheumatology Society?
Yeah, I think the lessons that I learned the most is that there are a lot of people who have been down this road, and there are a lot of people who are more than willing to help. And all you have to do is reach out to a couple, and pretty soon you're going to have almost more advice than you need. I think the biggest thing is perseverance. I think the biggest thing is communication. And I think that those things will get you a long ways. We did not, you know, the bylaws that we ended up adopting were bylaws that were drawn from a couple different societies. There was one, the Dermatology Society in our state. We looked at that. We looked at some bylaws from other states that we looked at, and we put them together and to make them our own. And we changed things, and we added things, and we subtracted things. But we started off by working on what others had done, and made it our own from there. It took us two conference calls and a meeting really to get off the ground, which I think was a testament to everybody involved.
Circling back to the biosimilars legislation that sparked the formation of this group, what were some of the provisions of the bill, and how did you and your colleagues feel about them?
Yeah, it's funny. So the provisions of the bill, this is a interchangeability bill in Nebraska, and we have a very strong statewide medical society, a medical association. The Nebraska Medical Association does a phenomenal job of communicating amongst all the physicians in the state, and they have a very strong presence in our legislature. And so they kind of had taken the lead on this, and you know, they discussed it amongst themselves, and the bill that we had actually is almost identical to a majority of other states, and it involves, you know, substitution for interchangeable biosimilars and, you know, the waiting time and the notification and all of the intricacies that are involved in those bills. So that's what the original bill was. And to be honest, by the time that we were notified that this was coming up, I was really blindsided by it. And ultimately, the bill got passed, and I think that it is sufficient, and it is just very similar to other states. So, and the irony of all ironies is that this kind of spurred our society's development and birth, if you will. But at the same time, we really didn't have the chance even to discuss this by the time it was actually approved.
In conversations that you're having now with your fellow rheumatologists, are people starting to use more biosimilars in practice, or are we not really seeing much uptake yet?
You know, it's something that I think rheumatologists are becoming more and more familiar with and more comfortable with. But the biggest hurdle right now is formulary and basically at the insurance level. And really, as a rheumatologist, although I'd love to say that I decide exactly what medication my patients get, I may order Enbrel and my patient may get Humira. And that's something that I have to okay, but that's just a fact of life, is that you have step edits in the prescription of biologic medications as a rheumatologist. I don't think it's right, but it's the way the world is right now. And so biosimilars are caught up in that, I think. As we have the biosimilars for infliximab on the market now, it all goes back to the pharmacy level. And if the insurance company is unwilling to pay for a biosimilar, even if I want my patient to get a biosimilar, it's not going to happen. And I think that's the biggest hurdle right now that is happening. It'll be interesting to see when subcutaneous biosimilars become available to us all. I think that it'll be very interesting to see how that actually hits and how the step edits are involved with the biosimilars of the subcutaneous molecules.
What makes those subcutaneous therapies so interesting compared with infused biologics?
Well, in some places, it's not that much different. It depends on where the infusion is happening. So you may, for example, you may have a hospital that decides that a certain biologic medication is favored on their formulary. And so if I send my patient over to, you know, Memorial Hospital or whatever hospital you send them to get the infusion, there may be a formulary restriction. But ultimately, it comes down more and more to the insurance company. And I think that when, I think it was about a year ago last year, when United Healthcare announced that they were making Remicade the preferred infliximab and that the biosimilar of infliximab would no longer be available or no longer be covered by them, I think that demonstrated how the marketplace is going to be difficult for biosimilars to gain a foothold, at least initially.
Thanks for being with us for this latest installment of Not So Different. Join us next time for more insights from leaders in this constantly changing landscape of biosimilar therapies. Until then, visit us at centerforbiosimilars.com.